This is a production of Cornell University.
Okay, it's 5:42. We'll call the meeting to order. We'll start with attendance of the voting members. David Bunk. John DeCastro. Chelsea Morris. Alex Moore. Michaela.
The plague gone through grad school.
Kim Thor. Yes. Christine Yao.
Yes.
Liz Newberry.
Here.
Liz Renee. Dana Westman. I know Dana has a class commitment. And then Max Chen.
Here.
Anne.
He said he was going to harvesting.
Harvesting? Okay. Giovanna Dent. Adrian Powell.
Here.
Serena Shea. Or Serena did reach out to me. She wasn't going to be able to make it. Asma Manibi. Stephanie Seller. And Maggie Zhao.
And you're here.
And I am here. Okay. Okay, so we'll go into executive board updates. I'm sorry, I'm getting ahead of myself. Sorry. So the minutes were distributed, and are there any corrections to the minutes as printed?
Okay. I believe in the last paragraph about SAGA that they're holding a karaoke event, not a carol event.
Okay, so karaoke versus carol. Are there any objections to changing karaoke, or carol, I'm sorry, to karaoke? Okay, seeing none, that correction will be made. Are there any other corrections? Max?
So in the first part of the minutes, under welcome and introduction, the part about the recap of Gregory Yields, he talks Ganesh and then Belt every time.
Oh, okay.
There should be two things instead of one. And then for the diversity and international students part, which is on page 3 of the minutes, in the second to last paragraph, it says, as graduates who go, efforts are made to recruit different students, such as international and varsity, a motion to change varsity to diverse background.
Varsity to diverse, okay.
To diverse background.
Okay, so are there any objections to adding the T to Gannett and then changing in the diversity update varsity to diverse? Seeing none, those corrections will be made. Are there any other corrections? If there are no other corrections, the minutes will be approved as corrected. Okay, so now to reports of officers and committee updates. Okay, so I wanted to make another plug this week for Transitions, and I think I talked about this a little bit last week. Transitions is a program that the graduate school has specifically for first-year graduate students. So it's a great series of programs. This coming up tomorrow, they'll have Show Me the Money, so that will be held tomorrow from 4 to 5:30 p.m. at 102 Mann Library. And they'll be talking about learning how to develop a successful budget. Then coming up next for Transitions is Managing Personal Relationships via Communication. So that will be on October 29th from 4 to 5:30 p.m., same location. And then Perspectives is a little bit different of a program. It's more so for all graduate students. And Perfectionism, Friend or Foe, will be coming up on October 22nd from 12:30 to 1:30 p.m. at Mann. And there's a link to register. And they do serve, at the Transitions, they serve dinner, and at Perspectives, they serve lunch.
And the Perspectives is part of a larger series of different sort of work-life balance initiatives from the grad school. Yep, so I recommend that you check those out. And then, okay, so here's another important announcement. So the Institutional Research and Planning Office recently did a climate study thinking about diversity on campus. And so the first link there is their initial findings based off the data that they collected last year. And the second bullet is pertaining to, they're going to be doing a series of focus groups that will be led by Dr. Sylvia Hurtado of UCLA. So they're bringing in someone external to come in and do focus groups on diversity climate here at Cornell. So I recommend that you take advantage of this opportunity. They're welcoming all perspectives, but they just want to hear from graduate and or doing undergraduate students about what you feel or what you perceive in terms of the diversity climate here. And so in addition to food, they're also offering $10. And the only thing is that you have to have been at Cornell for at least 1 year. And that second link is where you can go to learn more about that. And if you need any of these links after the meeting, just shoot an email to gpsa@cornell.edu. We're happy to relay the info.
Okay. So in terms of available committee positions, so all our internal committees are staff, except our communications could use people. So if you know anyone who has a passion for communications or feels that whenever they see the buzz that things could be better organized, could be maybe be different aesthetically, more concise, this would be the opportunity for us to get involved. Especially if we're looking for people who either know HTML or they're interested or open to learning HTML. So of course communications are pretty vital to us. And also we're always looking for ways to make it more effective and less annoying. So please, if you know anyone, please send me an email. So of external committees, we're doing pretty well in staffing, so we only have 9 positions still available, but I still wanted to plug a couple of them. For example, so in academic integrity, there's 8 positions, 7 are gone, they're designated by field. The only one that's left still open is one for someone in life science. So if you're in life science or you know anyone who might be interested in joining the academic integrity review board, please send me an email. I'd say that the time commitment is fairly minimal because for whenever there's a case, which should be any time, I've been told, from 3 semester to like 1 year, then the board contacts just 2 of the 8 graduate representatives to see if they'd come and review the material for the hearing and go into the hearing. So it's not that much of a requirement. I think it could give you an interesting perspective on the university because, of course, academic integrity is always a big issue. If you go to the next slide. So I just wanted to promote again some of the new committees that we've been asked to staff this year. So there's the Charter Day Steering Committee. This is for someone who might be interested in the large event. So there's upcoming university sesquicentennial. And it's going to be a 2-day academic festival with sessions, talks to lecturers, evening programs, and a concert and banquet, and a charter day ceremony the final day. From the panels they send to me, most of the meetings are going to be during this semester, because of course this is coming up next semester. It seems like a really big and interesting event to get involved in. Likewise, there's the curatorial committee for the Cornell Arts Council, and this year the biennial Intimate Cosmologies, Aesthetics of Scale in an Age of Nanotechnology. So it seems like there's an interesting interdisciplinary aspect, so I don't think we'd have to just be from an arts background, but of course it could be anything that works like in digital, and we'd really love to have graduate student perspective. Finally, a new interesting initiative that Cornell's putting on is about financial literacy and the importance of financial literacy for both undergraduates and graduates in an era where debt seems unavoidable. So they really would like a graduate student perspective on this, and they're trying to work to increase financial literacy, and of course the issues include student loans and debt management generally. So I think a pretty important issue that probably gives people a lot of stress, and they would like to have graduate perspectives on that committee. And so send me an email, or if you know anyone who might be interested, send information their way or ask them to contact me.
So just really quick, this is something that you might want to send out to your field because the Board of Trustees is hosting a special TGIF for grad students, and what makes it special is that there are free egg rolls. Yes, both pork and veggie. And also after this, there is going to be a costume contest if you stick around. I don't know if you would come in costume if you're meeting the Board of Trustees, but it's the annual Halloween costume contest after drinking beer with
the TGIF. So there will be $2 and $1 beer options, as well as their typical wine. Right, next, Hawk, I'm right on that. Anything else?
There.
Yes. Okay. Okay. Yeah. We'll come as zombies, right? Okay. Okay. Thank you. And then Bill, any updates for appropriations?
Appropriations committee has been meeting a lot. We are finishing up the filing funding cycle hearing. We just have the red bond yet to go. We've met with everybody else. Everything's on pace, so we'll have a recommendation maybe probably next week. So
thank you, Bill. And then communication. So Dana has a class conflict, but I believe she sent you any updates she has.
Yes, the buzz will be coming out this week and probably tomorrow morning, I believe she said, and like us on Facebook. There was a comment that was posted last week that was very popular and got a lot of hits. So we're getting a lot of traffic on Facebook. So keep it going.
Thank you. Finance Commission, Dan?
Nothing major. We haven't met since the last GPSA meeting. Just a reminder that budget requests, both annual and special projects, for the next funding cycle are due next Friday, the 1st of November.
Okay.
And they need to be submitted. There's some confusion last month that people were submitting budgets but didn't have the correct approval. So the approval process is different this year. You need to have three approvals for budget to be correctly submitted, the treasurer, the president, and the advisor. And they need to go over the same thing as the IPA section. So just make sure people are doing that when you're submitting a budget or people in the field are submitting a budget. We're doing it correctly because if you don't do it by next Friday, if you can't, then you can go to the number. Especially if such a project will definitely become an issue if you're a financial problem with that.
Thank you, Daniel. And programming board? I believe Ann sent some updates.
Keepstar research will be this Thursday, October 24th. We start at 8 p.m. at the Big Red Bar. There are going to be snacks there. And there's makeup, and they get ready at the Big Red Bar and then start the lurch towards downtown. We have spoken to several places, so the CTV, the conferences, and some bars, and they're very looking forward to see the zombies arrive there. But seriously, you should come to this event, it's going to be really cool. And the other thing that we have, next slide, is there's a movie that they will be showing at the Cornell Cinema Girls Live at October 29th from 6:30 to 9:30. So it's a great movie, you can watch the trailer and
thank you, Giovanna. Okay, student advocacy, Frank?
We finally had our first meeting, which was really successful. We had some interesting topics that we were wanting more time to hear. Any topics you think that need to be focused on, please do let me know. We think about little things, like what to do if you had an accident in the lab and you don't know how to pay for it. Because obviously there is no thing left to know.
Okay, great. Thank you. And faculty awards, Adrian? Okay, no updates. And diversity, Shaga?
Great. So, we didn't have, we first committee meets on all Mondays that you get to meet. So, we'll be meeting next Monday. We didn't have a meeting last week because we were on a fall break, but we did communicate out so many of them that we wanted to get to. So, what we have up there are a little bit about what I saw in our last meeting. on the issue of diversity in how Cornell has necessarily increased its efforts in bringing in diverse students from grad students, business students, business students, the law students, et cetera. But the efforts haven't been necessarily reflected in the population of faculty members that are involved in the school. So,
can you click the
next one?
Well,
I got it. So, this is kind of a composition of graduates, and you can easily find this by Google. You go on the Cornell dashboard and Google composition, and what the grad school has done is their composition of graduates stopping, whether they're black, they're actually stopping, and so on. And what we can go here, is that for the graduate school, which is here, so look at students' composition there, we know that this is a composition is 37% international students, 10% non-designated, other minorities and unrepresented minorities. And unrepresented minorities, if I'm not mistaken, would be African American, indigenous students, Latino, and Asian American. And so if we look at that and compare it to the faculty makeup, which is here, which would be the professors and in the academic field. I mean, you understand. So we see this, disproportionate. So what the committee has done is start to do more, and Mrs. Brown has more research into, who we contact to, and what are the right pipelines. We mentioned this in Brown, but that I can't say the name of their logo for something similar to these efforts in looking at diversity within faculty and specifically the academic faculty. So I want to share this with you guys. And so at certain times, this is, I think, one of the major issues that we're addressing and looking at. So if anyone has any information on this or, we'll discuss this in further detail at our next meeting. This will be like a big red bar. And I also want to highlight that we're also doing a Let's Talk event.
Just watching this.
A Let's Talk event, which is a series on different topics within the University of International Students Universal. It is scheduled for, I think, the second week of November. And I'll bring you to the date and place. But look, this is an opportunity for us to talk about some of these issues. The first issue will be the conference. We're inviting staff, faculty of color and national faculty, as well as administrators that will be in the actual hiring process. So, each line to discuss this and informally and to what we're doing is we're gaining knowledge. We're trying to do an assessment, and once the assessment is made, then I believe we effectively do want to figure out what we're next steps to. So, and this is an event also I want to highlight. So this is up with me, trustees, so the first member reception, which will be cool. Is this the same one?
It's
a little different.
Yeah.
So it'll be Thursday, October 24th, from 9 to 10 at Wells Hall. And there are looking to participate. I don't think there's a RSVP, but if you have any information, you need taxpayers, Latino Business Student Association, Fire Tobacco and Apparel Design Club, Voices, I don't know what's wrong with them. But, you know, you can find us on Facebook, and it's funded, funded through GSA Financial Committee. But now, it's a pretty cool event, it's because it's never gone, but it's a great place to meet, you know, people outside of the department, outside of your own service, and it's a night where the all groups are welcome from diverse, non-diverse, and diverse in the chair, and council hall. So, you know, we really want people to come and have the time. So,
thank you, Chavez. Okay, at this time we're going to move into new business. And please help me in welcoming Ann Padusa, who is here, Graduate and International Student Career Advisor.
Graduate majors don't always align in career research. College of Agricultural Life Sciences, Engineering, Hotel, ILR. And if your college isn't listed on that list, you can come and see me in Barnes Hall. Even if you were going to Cal, and if you'd like additional assistance, you're welcome to come and see me. And both in our programming and in our advising, we essentially follow this career development model that ties in really nicely with what you're doing in your graduate studies. Essentially, this lovely wheel of pain is essentially a research project. And I'll go into that in a little bit more detail. So essentially, it's a three-step process. The steps can happen simultaneously. They can go in many different orders. But the most important part is to understand yourself. Many people skip over this. They think, I'll just find a job. I'll apply for it. But this is really the grounding that gives you the focus for your career exploration. And then once you understand what you're interested in, then you can put you in touch with resources, and then you apply for jobs. And in workshops, so for example, the one that Chavez mentioned, the way this ties in with your graduate research is that essentially all of you are familiar with conducting background research to identify topics of interest. Well, this is when you think about yourself and you say, okay, what skills do I want to use? Or what are my career goals? So instead of researching a topic in the library, you have to research yourself. And we do offer programs on this, and these are great things you can talk about with a career advisor. And then once you do that, that background research, then you develop a hypothesis or question. Yes, this is oversimplified, but the career exploration process can be pretty overwhelming, so sometimes taking a simple approach can help get you along the way, even if it's a little messy, and I'm sure you're familiar with during the research process. So maybe you realize, I really love negotiation. I want to do negotiation in my career. So that could be your question that you explore. And so once you've identified those keywords, such as negotiation or consulting, then you gather information to test your hypothesis or to answer your question. So you can talk to people. We have resources. We have many different resources available. We have programs helping you to explore that. So once you gather that information, then you step back and say, here's my question, here's the resources, is there a good fit? A lot of times you might say, nope, it's not a good fit at all, so you have to go back to the beginning. Or if it's a good fit, then articulating results and publicizing is applying for jobs. So let's play a little game. So for career services officers, so caveat, these data do not include Johnson School, Law School, Community College, and some professional master's programs, that's just the way to collect our data. In the last year, so July 1st to June 30th, what were the total number of events for graduate students? So career-related events. And it still is not complete. There's many other things that are not posted in the database. But what's your update?
27.
Anything else? 45. So there's many events on campus related to careers. Some of them are specific to colleges or schools, but many of them are open in many different students across campus. They can be resume critique sessions, they can be mock interview sessions, they can be workshops. There's many different events. So how many number of contacts means that a student came in for an appointment, someone came to a career fair, someone came to a workshop? What did you get in that 1 year time period? 27?
Yes. 60.
5,000. 5,000. Okay. 2,000. Right. Very good. All right, 7,000. So what would you guess is the total number of students served?
900.
900, okay. I can tell the teacher's taking in.
That's 5,000.
5,000. All right, so 2,000. So, you know, what is about 7,000 graduate students? Yeah. So, not bad, and this does definitely exceed people. So that works out to about each graduate student that utilized some sort of career services utilized it about 3.6 times. So, my case is in that. And the breakdown, there's about equal breakdown between appointments and workshops and programs. And then the 1700 is a career fair. There's actually about 10 different career fairs. Some of them are on campus, some are off campus. And just wanted to let you know about a few programs. So the program that Chavez mentioned is the State Bank for Job Search Skills Workshop. We just had that a few days ago. And it's a fully rock workshop where if you don't know where to start with your non-academic career search, go to this workshop. We talk about how to understand your skills, how to network with people, how to write a resume. We also had a CV resume workshop that's available on CornellCast. This one is a fun workshop I really like to do. So we held one probably just a few weeks ago, and we developed this list of skills, transferable skills that you might have obtained while you're doing research, while you're doing teaching. And we talk about the myths associated with leaving academia. You know, sometimes people feel like they want to leave academia, but they can't. And so we talk about that process and explore different ways to use your skills in different careers. Another good one, please feel free to spread the word with your colleagues. This is going to be a two-day conference in New York City at the beginning of November. The Graduate School of Career Services has partnered, and we're paying for all of the in-graduate students' registration fees. I'll be sending out a notice in a little bit. You need an address to the newsletter. Last year, there was a Master's and PhD Virtual Career Fair. Did any of you attend that?
No.
Okay, well, there are 200 Quinlans, actually 220 Quinlans that registered, and there are about 40 employers that were recruiting just PhDs and master's students. It might be happening again this year. I'll keep you posted if it might occur in February. And then something new. Did any of you really notice about this extern program? All of you should have reached through a man called PhD. So essentially, the extern program is a job shadowing, alumni job shadowing program that has been often open for undergraduates, and now we're doing a graduate one. And so we're having an information session on October 31st, and this is an opportunity for you to meet with alumni and establish their workplace, and set them to make up to it during the third of work. There's a few more resources. I won't go into detail, but we have a lot of questions. But there's VersaTech PhD. We recently purchased the Science, Technology, Engineering, and Mathematics portion. So no matter what discipline you're in, you can look at discussion forums talking about different careers. I often recommend students to look at this because they have resumes, cover letters, job descriptions, and also descriptions of how people found their first job outside of academia. I get a question a lot. I'm doing my PhD in classics. What can I do with that? So everyone knows about LinkedIn, but a lot of times you might have wanted to LinkedIn for a while. So instead, you just go to Google and you just Google LinkedIn, put quotation marks PhD, comma classics, and see what happens. Anyone who has a publicly available profile will show up, and you can see their job title, so you can find out what real people are doing. And the best thing is that you don't have to talk to them. And you can click on their profile, and you can see their career path. And you can see if they're able to go right into that job, right from graduate school, you know, all kinds of things. So definitely Google is a great expert to that. And then one thing that I developed fairly recently is this document. Does anyone get the Experience Career Path of Academia? This document? Okay. So this is something that I put together because there's so many resources at Cornell for graduate students. And sometimes it can be a bit overwhelming to figure out how all the pieces fit together during your job search. So I put this together to list for that research exploration process, different workshops that we have online, workshops we have in person, different web resources, times when you can speak to a career advisor. This is all detailed in a lovely 13-step process. So let me know what you think. It's in beta testing phase. So I'd love to know if it works for you, if it's confusing. That would be very helpful. And then, of course, we have resources on our career services website. The career guide is a book that documents the whole non-academic job search process. An optimal resume is also a great resource, not only to help you develop your resume, but they have a portion where you can practice interviewing via video, so you can record yourself, and it's great to get feedback. So a few challenges, as exemplified through So every event for graduate students is posted on the grad school newsletter. It goes out every week. We post it on the career services website. Most of the programs that are, actually all of the programs I do are represented on the grad school program chart, which Jan will talk about. We also send out notices through CCNet, our database. And then there's also sometimes send out to the GSM lecturers or going through the community groups. So we appreciate any suggestions you have in terms of, you know, advertising these events more widely. We do get feedback from students about balancing disciplines specific needs with more general programs. So this is a constant struggle. And it's inherently fraught because when you're transitioning to career outside of academia, you have to put in general skills that should be general to any discipline. So it can be very difficult to strike that balance. And then one other thing that we've been noticing is that whenever we have programs that require RSVPs, so for example, if we have food or if we need to have counselors in, we've actually had quite a large number of people signing up and not showing up. So for example, I did a workshop last month and 80% of graduate students have signed up and not show up. And so even the workshop that we did just a few days ago, 40% of graduate students did not show up. So this is a problem because one, it makes it difficult to plan for things. When we're looking at our final numbers at the end of the year and thinking about which workshop to repeat, you know, it can be difficult. So if you have suggestions about, you know, how this could be modified, that would be great. You know, we've certainly been trying to do our part with sending reminders to people who are RSVP, being very clear about these things, but it is a struggle. So let you know about that. And we appreciate your help in spreading the word about career services. So if you or your colleagues have any questions about the career, like if you just say, I don't want to be a faculty member, what else is there? Come in and talk to us. I talk to students who say that all the time. We can help you through the process. If you don't know where to go, you can contact the Barnes Culture office, go directly to the right place, look for the events and these locations. And then your CCNet profile is one of the main, or it is one way that we can connect with you. So we recommend it that you update that as well. So I think we have time for
Last year at the town hall meeting that we held over in Village Chapel, we had the idea that United got like a search tool where you can search more by the skills rather than by the job description. Is that a way we can embed that in CCNet or something? Because it's sometimes hard to get a set of skills, you might not even really know what that transfers to in a job description. So say you're good in programming in NetLab or whatever. But you don't even know which jobs would require their ways, and then you take some more searchable time.
So that's just in CCNet?
Or anywhere where it's like whatever platform we can use that come out, we can't really ask other platforms.
Okay. So as far as I know, I'm not familiar with that searching capability. That's something that I kept with my colleagues. One way that is a different way is there's a database called ONET. It's put out to the U.S. Department of Labor, and they categorize about 900 different occupations, and they do code them based on skills. So a roundabout way would be to plug in whatever skills you're interested in, see what careers appear in ONET, and then you can go through CCNet and see what matches. But I know that's not satisfactory. You've got to go through the version of CCNet. So, yeah. So thanks for the suggestion. I'll bring that back to my colleagues.
Do you have also career fairs?
So the question is, do we do the day career fair? Yes, we do. I can claim no credit whatsoever for it, but yes, our offices do do that, and a number of other career fairs.
Okay. I went this year, and I was doing well organized, but it didn't have as many. I know you guys are awesome too. You know, just finding non-academic jobs. But they had some, but I would say the majority of career fair is very undergrad focused. And I mean, there's some here, like I said, I had a list of such programs, but the majority, even ones like, I'll call them the name, but even ones that they do like research or, you know, like still farm food companies, that's there, but they're there to find a level. So again, there's maybe something they have for people who know PhDs or masters or graduate community.
Okay. So if you can hear in the background, is that for the career fair that was held, this is the university-wide career fair in September, that would it be fair to say that you're a little bit disappointed, it seemed a little bit more undergraduate focused, that a lot of companies there that could potentially be appropriate for graduate students seem to be more interested in undergraduates? Is that correct? Okay. So that's something, you know, we do get that feedback. And actually, my colleague Christy Holmes, who's the director of postdoctoral studies office, we hold a workshop in advance of the career fair addressing that problem because, you know, there's many different reasons why employers come to the career fair. Sometimes they are recruiting people to do on-campus interviews and to find individuals. Employers are there just to let the students know that your company exists, they want to spread information, that type of thing. Sometimes they're also going to spread information and they might come back later to recruit people, or they might help direct people to job postings online. So, you know, sometimes it can be a hindrance for graduate students. And so in our presentation, we talk about how you can still benefit from it, whether it's asking the recruiters that don't seem to be interested in graduate students, how you can ask follow-up questions so you can get in touch with the right person, or how you can gather information that will make you a better interviewer, or write a more informed cover letter. We often recommend that students go to information sessions held by employers. So even though the career fair might not be, you know, that useful to you, if you can follow up and learn more about the company during the information session, sometimes that's beneficial. So, yeah, I agree. You know, nothing for us. You know, if we do the master's in teaching virtual career fair, that might be something worthwhile to check out. So, and once again, if you go to the career fair and you find that it's not a good fit, let me know. Schedule an appointment with me. I'd love to hear your feedback, love to know your struggles. Because that's something that, you know, we can try to take into account and to try to improve upon.
We have time for one more question.
Yes.
Is this document available on the website?
Not yet. But
okay. Thank you, Anne. At this time, help me in welcoming Janet Allen, Associate Dean of Academic and Student Affairs.
Next time you see the provost, you should say it. Probably for many, many things, but
the commission to support academic English courses. How many of you know about the Graduate Writing Consultant Service? We actually did this last spring as a pilot effort. We thought it was successful enough. And in fact, there's an individual handout I hope you picked up. Somebody pulls it up. The Graduate Writing, Consultant. This is for all graduate and professional students. They are trained graduate writing consultants that they can give you one time or on a regular basis. Those of you who are here may not need this service, but I expect over the course of the semester, you'll talk to somebody who has questions about their writing and maybe being struggling or just, I mean, who among us can't improve our writing, right? So make sure you are notifying your colleagues in your field about the Graduate Writing Consulting Service. It's actually funded by the graduate school, but offered to the Knight Institute for Writing. How many of you know about the graduate writing class that they offer? Any of you in the graduate writing class this semester? Again, something I would love to say. How many of you know about our proposal thesis and dissertation writing boot camp? We started this in the spring. We did four of this in June. Staggered start, overlapping. And what we'll do is we were looking for a week in fall semester to offer fall semester this year, so we don't have them every week. We thought about doing it for 4 days of fall break, but that was going to be a little crazy, if I can use that word. So we'll do it again in January. We just started today looking at reserving space and dates. We're looking at the second week in January, but we will soon, by the end of the month, have announcements out. The application is available online. Don't put that yet because it's not the application yet for January. But I had so much fun doing these that I hope you will come to one of the either proposal writing, the thesis writing, or dissertation writing boot camp. Any of you signed up for the Executive Writing of this place? Thank you very much. I had a lot of fun with that too. If you don't know about that, go to this website to sign up. We now have 9,142 productive writers from 225 writing schools in 16 countries. But who counted, right? How many of you have attended one of the graduate school writers? Thank you, Nicole. Thank you. Every Monday through Friday, the barn is open and not under construction. From 8 in the morning to 11:30, the upper floor, I call it the third floor, but apparently there's no third floor, that's just the second floor, but I think that little landing in the middle counts as the floor, having come from New York City where it's all about real estate. But on the second floor, as it turns out, it's a big red barn. Every Monday through Friday, 8 to 11:30, we provide free coffee and tea and a quiet space. Sometimes I come around and I shush people. That would be me up there doing that. But come and write with a community of writers. We have signs of encouragement. We have a sign-in sheet up there. So we hope you feel like you're part of the Directive Writing community when you come. And then this is a non-Cornell website because we haven't gotten this put up on our graduate school website yet. But we really started this year making a much larger effort to help our students to be competitive with writing graduate scholarship applications. Times at Columbia and the NSF Awards came out, the HHMI Awards came out. I've run to the website, see how Columbia did competing against the other schools. Cornell. Well, now I still run to the website that I will Cornell. So let me come to you. There are so many reasons it benefits you, your field, the guide, your advisor, the graduate school when you write a competitive fellowship application. We've been doing workshops. How many of you are doing one this fall, writing a fellowship application? You know that next Wednesday afternoon, I think it's at 3:30, we invite you to come to an advanced fellowship writing workshop. The price of admission is that you bring a draft of your fellowship application. And we will have, somebody will read it for you, or if you don't want to share it yet, we will give you a checklist to use to and then you buy the headings to enhance your fellowship application. And so this is the first year we're doing such an effort that we want to add to this every year. We haven't added to the staff. Many of you were probably in an undergraduate school where there was an office of scholarships and fellowships, and they might have had 3 to 5 people to help you. This is what we do for fun in our free time. But we want to be very competitive and get lots of money. That doesn't sound too late. Okay. How many of you have seen this pay from the website? We list here graduate school, career services, Center for Teaching Excellence, the Cornell Server, which is the Center for the Integration of Teaching, Research, and Learning Service, CIRC, I think all those are right. But all of the professionalization activities that are going on for graduate students on the campus, if you go to this page, then you can access what those are. This is the chart that Ann referred to. How many of you visited the chart? What we do here is we list all of the workshops for the semester and the year, but in the first column to the left here, we actually post it, whether it's something that will help you develop communication skills, develop your career, develop your leadership and management skills, teaching skills, research ethics, responsible conduct, and research, and scholarly and technical skills, or things for personal development. So if you're looking for a workshop in a skill area, I know last week, 2 weeks ago, you talked about transferable skills. If you're looking for a workshop by skill area, this is a good place to go. Look at the first column. The second column actually tells you the title, and then when the workshop is being offered. And here are those websites for the last two pages I've shown you. The other thing, I would bookmark this and look at the graduate school calendar. You know, maybe 2 weeks in advance, if you're planning your schedule 2 weeks in advance, go to the graduate school calendar and see what's on there. I actually went there today, right? I thought there was a glitch because there was so much offers that I thought there was something to the calendar. I think it was October 8th, it fell down, 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 down. You couldn't attend half of the things that are being offered by the graduate school and our partners. So I think you can find something if you're looking for something to do, if you have a specific need, or you have some free time, or you're thinking about making a presentation, writing a paper, going on the job market. I think you'll find something for you. Let's see what's next. So one other thing I wanted to mention. So 2 weeks ago, and just last week, Liz sent me the list of professionalization topics that came out of your breakout groups. And what we did last week and over the weekend and until today, we went through your list and we listed every workshop that met the need that you identified. So I will email this to you guys. I'll give you a copy, and I have a few other copies here. If what you wanted to see offered here on campus made Liz's list and you want a copy of this, I'm happy to give you a copy. Oh, and here's the original if somebody wants to. But if your suggestion made the list, and I want you to look at a copy of this, and again, we can email it to you guys.
We can still send it out.
And you can send it to everybody. If we went through what you said you wanted, and I think the only thing that we left blank was poster writing. And is that like making conference presentations?
Yeah.
And I'm sure somebody will do a workshop on that topic now that you have said you want a workshop on that topic. One of the questions I had for Liz following your discussion 2 weeks ago, that if you have time and you want to give me some, because there's two questions I had, this is one of them, or you can email me. But I'm very interested in wanting to know what you want the graduate school, our career services, teaching center to do, and what you want your skills to do. Because over the years as I've done workshops, I've often said, my workshop to students in all 89 fields is generalizable in many ways, but at least you know what the questions are that you need to be asking in your field, in your department, of your advisor, of your advancement. But one of the things we always struggle with in the graduate school is, you know, should we do it? A few weeks ago, we did Fellowship 101, how to write a competitive fellowship application. But then that was a generalized presentation, regardless of the field you were in. And I know that many of you are wanting to talk with your NSF application from your field or from your division. There are other very prestigious and very good or very competitive fellowship competitions out there where you want your field to be doing something or you want social sciences to get together. And so that would be something I'd be interested in hearing back from you or getting an email from you about. What are those topics that you really think you benefit from the graduate school doing and will make it applicable to people in all 89 fields? And what would you like us to convey? Because somebody wrote to me recently and said, yeah, but we don't want to talk to our DGSs about this. We don't want to talk to our faculty about this. Will you tell us what you want them to know? And we'll tell them that in a non-student, we'll just say, do you think they need to be doing this? And then the second question I have, it has to do with the way we communicate the events that we're doing. How many of you every Monday get something called graduate school announcements and graduate school news? And that's the way, and I know already now, you can opt out of getting it, so if some of you opt it out, you're probably not getting it, but that's the way we communicate most all of these events, fellowship competitions we know about, upcoming deadlines. We put it on the calendar, and was mentioning the number of calendars that these things go up on. We have it on this chart. That lists the skill areas and workshops by skill areas. Recognition letters, maybe we should do posters. We kind of quit doing a lot of print things because our electronic communication is the way to go. And given the number of workshops there are, we probably don't want to direct that many resources to do the print things, but as soon as an event is over, then it needs to be recycled or thrown away. But if there are other ways to advertise with these events that we're not thinking of, but if you go to the graduate school calendar and make it a habit of doing that every week or once every 2 weeks, you will catch everything that's being offered by the graduate school and its partners. And that may be the best way.
A lot of buildings have like screens where different things pop up, like what people do in the department. If the graduate school would have something that they can do,
how many of you have screens like that in your building or department? I wonder what would be the best way to find out who the person in your department is responsible for that is.
It would be very helpful, maybe this is a question for the university communication group.
To see if they have a listing. If not, we'll email you and ask you to send us, you know, who we need to be in touch with. For example, you can search by social sciences, life science, physical science, humanities, or you can put in keywords. If you're studying Japanese literature or whatever you're studying, you can go to Japan, a country, you know, any keyword. And I don't know if I've told you all this story before. When I was at Columbia, before Columbia had its special fellowship database, our financial aid officers used to say to our students, go to Cornell's website. It's a really good search for fellowship database. And then about 4 years ago, when Columbia designed theirs, they designed theirs to look just like Cornell. But Cornell has a social fellowship database. Columbia is open access. Duke is open access. University of Michigan is open access. And the website that I gave you about fellowships, there are links to other schools that have open a fellowship database. You have to have a DD or net ID to get into it. But apparently Cornell is the best. And again, I had nothing to do with it. I wasn't even here when it was developed. So I would use that. That's a good source. The thing I did when I was in graduate school, every time I read an article, first thing I did was jump to the bottom to see who funded that research. And when I was reading an article in my own field, which was about all the time I was in graduate school, then if this bachelor or this postdoc had gotten funding from NIH, the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation, then that was a place that I could go and look for funding because I knew they funded the kind of research I was doing. And that was before the internet. You had to go to the library and look those things up. But now you can go to the website. Do I sound like an old one? That's what I do. I do. So, other questions? I'm hesitant to say anything about the graduate school.
I have a quick question. And I know that we've talked a little bit offline about this, and we've talked a little bit about it here. But in conjunction with Anne's presentation, it seems like one of the issues from the administration perspective is understanding how to effectively communicate with graduate students and professional students, I would say any student probably, or the greater campus community, right? In part because we were inundated with electronic communication and that sort of thing. Is there a grant opportunity or a research opportunity here that the graduate school could capitalize on to better understand the ways that graduate students are getting information? We can spread it by word of mouth here, and I greatly encourage the information, like last time I sent out those notes, if you could replicate that and send it out to your field about some of the information that's been sent here today, or talked about here today. But on top of that, I just feel like there's this broader consideration of how to effectively engage and communicate with our constituents.
So are you saying, could GPSA get money when you said grant opportunity to do a survey?
For the graduate school, I imagine that you would have much more resources than the GPSA as a volunteer-based organization.
Well, one of the things, how many of you have this year taken one of the new graduate school survey. We have a first year entering student survey. We have an exit survey that I guess every year you probably have to take yet. We have a doctoral student experience survey. We have a survey of students who are admitted but don't come. But obviously, you snuck in and you took that one and you're here tonight. So that was developed last year. We're doing it this year for the first time. And once we get all the results back and look at those, then in a couple of years, we will have an opportunity to add to that survey, modify it, and that might be the point to ask those questions. I don't know. We're always concerned about survey fatigue, that you're going to get too many surveys, and then you won't respond. But these are now surveys that are funded, and we really want to do these over the next decades so that we can compare data from administration to administration.
I would say in general the best form of communication is face-to-face communication and peer-to-peer. As a some dumb, maybe you can correct me if I'm wrong, but as a communication scholar, that's the best and most effective way.
When you have a meeting with your GPSA group and you have meetings where you talk to your
I'm just saying broadly than as a general way of getting information. I don't know. Generally, I would ask a friend first, right? That's what I think most people do.
And that's why we really want to partner with GPSA so that as you are rep, your leadership and the rep of GPSA, and so we think that your peers come to you and ask you about resources, they ask you these kind of questions, or you have opportunities, how do you feel you love the rep than the regular emails all the graduate students and the field directors?
So I think it's like as viewers that you know the students in your field. So for example, whenever I know somebody that's interested in any of the topics, I know that person directly. So how it's a more direct, you know, and they do it. Like I've sent people to them just so they know they're interested, and they're in different fields. They get to the class and they're totally lost on how people can just send them there. So I think that's the best way to do it. We know our friends, so we can not send bulk emails for more than we're taking.
So, looking at something where, for example, the career event, it would be more sufficient if I send it to someone in the GPSA, and then if you knew, if you had friends, then you just send it out that way, or is that what you told me? I'm wondering if you guys have to think about that.
I would say that I think it does work really well.
We have time for one more question.
I'm passing around, and there are still copies of all the handouts that Anne and I brought with us up here, including, not particularly apropos of our topic, but this is just a new brochure that became available today for graduate student spouses and partners. And so if you didn't get one of these, there are still many copies up there. So thank you.
Thank you, Jan. Okay, so in the interest of time, with the food getting here a little bit later, we got a little bit later of a start, so we're going to go ahead and skip over Resolution 3 and have a condensed conversation with Zine in terms of the discussion of absentia. And then we'll wrap it up probably after about 7 minutes and then go into open forum.
That's fine. Okay, so hands up how many people for whom this is your first year at GPSA. A lot of people. So I think that like one thing that we've noticed with the breakout sessions is that like obviously it's very hard to get institutional to carry over institutional memory. So I want to take this opportunity to talk about what I think is like one of the very important resolutions that we did last year, which is Resolution 17 about graduate tuition. So we've been talking a lot about, that as graduate students, you always want more money, and part of that is probably, I think there's probably no field here where you finish in the allotted 5 years, or like average number of people finish, correct? And the problem then comes, like, how do you fund yourself after the funding package ends? And that's where we, in the Resolution 17, advocated that Cornell, like our peer institution, lower the tuition of not just tuition after the exam or later in the degree, so you can pay out of pocket.
For example, all of the IDs in that resolution, if you'd like to look it up, it has all that data, lower tuition after that time so people can pay out of pocket. Because once, of course, your funding package ends, and if you don't have a fellowship of the kind that the grad school will match of cover tuition and lower pocket, then in some way that the $29,000 tuition bill becomes real for you. And so we're trying to look at ways that they can alleviate this problem. And so one thing I wanted to sort of highlight is that, of course, the grad school received this resolution very well, and we're waiting to hear back from them. But I just wanted to highlight what happens in this scenario when that funding ends and you don't get an external fellowship, which is sort of the nightmare scenario. But of course, it happens to many people, and many people feel can actually pass together money, get them by, but what happens when that happens? And so you're left with two options. You could go on a leave of absence, or you can go in absentia. And so I'll just go through what both these things mean, because they sound very similar, and what they're supposed to do. A leave of absence can be like a medical leave, and you don't pay any tuition, but also maybe you have no access to Cornell resources, because I guess it's set your way, and it often stops the clock of funding. I guess the way that you imagine it happening, that if there's a medical crisis, some other kind of crisis, and within your normal time span, you take a leave of absence, and that's what we stop your funding clock. Absentia is, I believe, supposed to be generally used when you're going to be doing research elsewhere. And you have to be 100 miles away from Cornell, you don't have to pay full tuition, it's only $200 per semester. But how it actually plays out is once your funding ends, you're kind of forced into either taking a leave of absence, or absentia. What does that mean, of course? Leave of absence, if you're not taking it because it's flexible, like if you have some sort of emergency, means that, again, you have no access to Cornell resources. You can't even access your Cornell ID. You have no external access. So what does, of course, mean? And also, I think, in case if you have students like myself, it's where you view the complications you might have to leave the country, which, of course, would then cut you off from the resources you have to finish your dissertation. So you just turn that into absentia, where I think you allow you to keep student status, and that could be about $200 per semester. However, the tax here is it has to be 100 miles away from Cornell. So you are still in the problem of that technically, I believe you're allowed to use the resources, but you have to be 100 miles away. I believe you're allowed to come and visit your special committee. But other than that, you can't visit in Ithaca. Also, this I've heard quite a bit, and this is where I hope you get either feedback from me now, or if anyone wants to email me, of some of the nightmare scenarios that this has produced for people who are trying to finish their dissertation after the funding packages run up. I've heard stories about people who have come to Cornell to return archives they want to work at, and then because of the 100-mile radius, they can't technically go to their archives. I've also heard about people who have families that become established in the community that suddenly, because of the 100-mile radius, they somehow have to uproot their kids from school and move outside the 100-mile radius. Also, I understand the graduate school's perspective. I believe they started getting audited a couple years ago to make sure that absentia was being followed.
What happened was 2 years ago, students were transformed being approved for an internship status, but then not leaving. And because these statuses have financial implications, they are subject to financial audit. And I discovered that students were saying that they were living 100 miles or more away from Ithaca, but they weren't. And so that's how it got audited, because the university had board of registration on which they based. So tuition is a revenue stream coming into the university, and they base each year's budget on a projected revenue stream. And what they saw is the students had briefly tried to gain the system. Bottom line, they have to adjust the budget. So some budget category loses its revenue when revenue goes down and tuition goes down. But I just want to say, good thing you were mentioning the health leave of absence. That is truly designed for students who, for health reasons, can't perform the requirements and expectations that their committee has for them. So if you can continue researching or working or going to class, then you don't need to go on a health leave of absence. You have to sign to stop the clock, and when you go on a health leave, your field has to honor its commitment to how many ever years of funding or how much funding they've given you for admission. So
first we'll leave that the field doesn't have to honor its funding commitment, because we have some personal leave of absence is more of a voluntary, you know, you decide to leave, and then if the field wants to use the funding they gave you to admit new students, they can do that. On the other hand, when students do go on funding and they come to the graduate school, we have said we will adjust you money from next year's budget to fund one of your fifth year or seventh year students. And so the field can decide to give continued funding to advanced students as long as they're recognizing the trade-off. And we don't get any more money because we do that, but we trade off by giving them money, you know, that we're holding to them for the budget.
Thank you. Thanks for the clarification. So again, this is just to highlight, I think, one of the important resolutions that we did for last year, and exactly how the two policies which were made for absentia and leave of absence, which are categories that often are very useful, end up sort of becoming a last resort for people for responding to from that. I was wondering, I'm from English, and the story that I've heard are mostly from humanities, and I really appreciate, really appreciate hearing how this may have affected others' fields as well, but also kind of open up to questions now or any sort of comments.
Well, I think the issue with the visa is that all of us in the are having something neither can we deal with it again, because the university requires moving moving 100 miles away or moving your student benefit. Is that a problem that not the university can really deal with that, like I said, all the problems, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, the Department of Immigration or whatever will not recognize it.
Yeah.
So we just have to make sure that if we change something, we get the status of such change. We can't change the visa law.
Yeah.
I want to say something really simply to kind of align with the way I did the company with absence policy. It is such a status policy that we run, so if we are going to be 100 miles away or more, you don't have to pay full tuition. You're not going to be going to the gym. You're not going to be in an on-site library. You're not going to be requiring the same kind of courses as you're here. So it wasn't designed so that you could pay less tuition. It was designed so that if you were going to be away, you didn't have to pay full tuition. Because the graduate school position is once the department admits you, they should work with you so that you are funded for the entirety of your program. Because we're always saying, in fact, the general committee of the graduate school for the last two meetings considered, they voted down our proposal for the first meeting. We changed the language, and they've accepted the much watered down language in October, so that they're not allowed to admit doctoral students that they can't fund for a significant period of time. Now we're still leaving it up to the field, but there are some fields that have not been promising any funding. So that has to stop. And we encourage students to work with their DGI community advisors. Is that for humanity, the normative time degree right now is 6.5 years. So we encourage fields to make a plan with students. Although some of those years, it's reasonable that the expectation is that the student made a good faith effort to bring in a national competitive scholarship award for themselves. But we're really encouraging people, only bring in the number of students that you can afford to fund. And fund students until they finish the degree.
Yeah, I guess just respond to you, Fran. So the idea, of course, is advocating for the lower tuition is that then if it's a fairly nominal fee, you could pay out of pocket, and that means you could keep your visa status, stay, use all the resources, and so forth, which seems like a fairly equitable situation. Because that's one thing we were saying in the resolution is that after your exam, you're probably not going to be taking class anymore, you're not using resources in the same way as someone who's pre-A.
This is just a general question. So for these students that even do go out and get these competitive grants and all those folks, usually that goes for a fair amount of time as well. So let's say you get here in the second year and get a big grant fellowship, and it takes you 2 years, fifth, or even 6 years. But if the program means 6.5
departments, if I'm not mistaken, necessarily say, okay, well, you had 4 years funding, so we'll reserve that 3 years funding you got, because you can still, you know, pass your bid for 6 years to run with all. So I don't necessarily see how that would exactly, you know, solve the problem. Still run out there as a grant when, like I said, we get that grant, not like the department saying, okay, so you got that, so you'll hold these 2 or 3 years. Does that make sense?
Okay,
I think it depends per department. I think some of them may recycle it, or they will be like, oh, you great, you have some money, now we can reserve it to you for other people.
Right, yeah, that's
exactly
how it
works.
Thank you, Mr. Coleman. I know what we've heard about that briefly. I think some departments are saying, okay, we're giving you 5 years funding. Do you think that it's reasonable for you to finish in 5 years? And students are then saying, well, you know, we're trying, but none of us are managing to succeed at that. You know, is there any chance we can change some of the program requirements? And some people are saying no to that. I think that's where some of the sort of friction comes. In sort of both sides sort of saying, well, you know, I think you shift on this and you shift on that, and neither really managing to do.
And you know, those are the kinds of things that we would really like to know in the graduate school, if you want to see me email the kind of details of the TPO we were talking about saying, because we have annual meetings with the DGS. Actually, we meet with the DGS once a semester. We have biannual meetings of all the 89 fields. Every 2 years we meet with all of them. And you know, and I've heard the dean say to, you know, the DGS or the department chair, your students take it for the church. You have to provide more funding. Because we don't want, you know, what Christine said were the nightmare stories. We don't want to see those happening. One suggestion, or maybe one caveat, maybe this is a good suggestion, you know, there's a new budget model this year. And I'm not saying I understand anything about it, maybe at some point you want to have Sarah Whitmer, who will receive fellowships and funding for the graduate school. But it used to be that the graduate school paid tuition on all the fellowships, and now all the tuition is going to be paid by your home school. So we give almost all the fields first-year fellowships, whether you get them, we give money based on X number of students, the most all fields, except maybe some very small we give money that the field can take and distribute among the students, combined with teaching assistantship that always comes from the school, but now your tuition dollars are going to come from the school. And this is a good time, like for those of you in engineering, those of you in arts and sciences, those of you in very good social work. We don't have social work here. For those of you, either get the associate dean, the person in charge of finances in your school, or have these conversations within disciplinary clusters. You know, it makes sense for history, anthropology, anybody that's in arts and sciences, particularly a social science and arts and sciences, to have a meeting and say, we want you to explain a new budget model to us and the impact it's going to have on fellowships and funding. So sometimes what we need to control in the graduate school, the money's no longer going to come from the provost to the graduate school, it's going to come from the provost to your individual school, and they are going to make some major decisions about funding that used to be the graduate school engaged in making and then distributing the money to your field.
Is this legislative perspective start this year?
But I understand they kind of are working with a dual model. And I'm not involved in any of these conversations, but this is just what I hear in meetings with people talk about. They're working with a dual model this year, so in case the new model has big glitches, then everything's kind of chaos. There's a kind of a shadow system or something going on this year, so it may be that the full impact of this will be seen next year, but they're beginning to implement it this year.
July 1st for the new fiscal year.
And last year we had the provost come in, and we will have somebody probably coming in later this year to talk about the budget model. Unfortunately, we have to wrap that up because in the interest of time. No, it's okay. No. It was a really great discussion. If you have any other feedback on that, please email Zine. And if you know anybody in your fields that are affected, again, contact us and let us know.
Okay, and so we'll take a few minutes. We'll take literally like 2 minutes for open forum. Is there anyone that wanted to speak in open forum? Spring, I think you had your name up first. Thank you. And next.
Okay. So the Society for Asian American Graduate Affairs, we're having our Asian American Graduate Professional Student Mixer this coming Thursday at 5:30 in the Basement Cella. Some of you may know that's where they do their wiki tasting Tuesday evening. So we're co-sponsoring this with four other graduate professional student organizations in the business school and the law school. So feel free to come on out and meet
the students
on the campus.
Thanks, Matt.
Yeah, I just want to give a quick update on the medicine issue. Thanks, first of all, to everyone who did get in touch after that. I've spoken to some of the people that are working on this in the faculty, and I have copies with me of the resolution that they hope to take up in the so, seeing that from me, if you're interested in that. I think it's an intelligent resolution. Maybe it's a good starting point for a conversation that I think is very timely to follow. So, I'm going to go ahead and ask you.
Thank you. Anyone else?
Okay. We have time to go over to a few words about the budget, or should I just send that out in an email?
You wouldn't mind sending that out.
Yeah.
Can I just say, email me with these nightmare stories if you want to say, keep my data out of it. Or if you want to say, don't even mention what field I was on, send these to me if you want to. And someone will just talk and tell me about it in graduate school without identifying you at all. If you'll let us identify the field, then we'll talk to you about the graduate studies in the field in a very general way.
Okay. Thank you. A motion to adjourn?
Second.
Okay. We are now adjourned. Are you up to bed yet, guys? Or I'm here, babe. Good luck.
This has been a production of Cornell University on the web at cornell.edu.